Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, welcome to Whole Truth Podcast with myself, Jordan Stevens, and I'm joined today by Jamie Lang.
Hello.
Who you might know from the Private Parts podcast.
There we go.
As well as television, because you do loads on that.
I did a little bit of television, yeah.
Oh, you're kissing this microphone, I love it. Can you give me a nickname on the spot?
For you?
Yeah, go on.
Curls.
Brilliant. Jordan Stevens, a.k.a. Curls with a Z.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, Curls with a Z, man.
Probably.
Curls with a Z with a TM just above it.
Some people used to call me Chicken Twizzler in school.
Sick, I love a Chicken Twizzler.
Because my hair did resemble...
Chicken Twizzlers.
Apparently. What? Also, my name was originally Rizzler as a rapper, so it was Rizzler the Chicken Twizzler.
Do you want to hear my nickname was similar to yours? Jam Pot.
Jam Pot.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I reckon Chicken Swizzler and Jam Pot would fucking kick
Not
it
Not Chicken
together.
Swizzler, that sounds weirder.
Chicken Twizzler?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Chicken Twizzler and Jam Pot would take the streets.
Yeah, we'd definitely.
And we would, they'd be like, oh, here they come. Have you invited?
We'd become a parody act like really fast. And we'd be like, no, this is completely serious.
The problem is with the nicknames is when you go to a private education school, they just basically put O on the end of your name. So I was Lango for a bit, or it was Steve-O, or it was like Jono. It's always like that.
There's really?
Yeah, they always do that kind of thing. So it's not very creative.
I could end up asking you about the insider goss on private school.
Mate, we don't think we have time for that.
Yeah, no, probably not. So, thank you for coming on the podcast. I really
sure,
appreciate
man.
It.
Hey, by the way, can I just be, this podcast is epic.
Thank you.
It's amazing the fact that, like, and also we're recording this during Mental Health Awareness Week, and the fact that you are so open, so honest, get people on to talk about different things, it's a really great thing that you're doing. This podcast is pretty epic, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I think it's great.
I appreciate that. I mean, it was birthed from... a little idea, and you know, here we are. I like the idea. I mean, Greg James was on recently, and he almost pitched a podcast to me better than I could have pitched it to him.
Really? Did he?
Yeah,
do
because
it?
It's just like creating a. I like talking to people, you know. And
sure.
It's just trying to create a safe space to, I don't know, just be a bit open. Also, it gives. I mean, different with you because you are also very honest and do your own podcast. But it you know, you're wanting to give fans, I suppose, or just listeners an opportunity to. Hear a different aspect, a different yeah. angle on. We live in times where transparency is of utmost demand, and I think there actually needs to be some limits on it. But I think this is a context in which I think it's.
Dude, I can agree with you more. I think what happens is at the moment with you know, this sort of culture that we live in is that we live in this world of Instagram and all the different things where everything has a filter and you know, everyone has to kind of live up to like a certain. Way, you know, if you talk about the celebrity world, right, all these celebrities out there feel like they have to pause before they reply.
Oh,
they
like cancel culture.
Yeah. No worries, man. They have to do all these different things, and I feel that like being open and honest is actually a really great, authentic way to be, and a lot of people don't do that for some reason.
Oh, that's what I was looking for earlier. Commodity. Uh-huh. The only danger I feel now in our current climate is transparency becoming a commodity, because if you have to be transparent, I think that gets a bit dangerous because, yeah.
Also, you just put your gold tooth in. Do I not get one?
Nah.
Why not?
Because you got to go to Milk and Honey and get it fitted. Shout out Milk and Honey, by the way.
Where's Milk and Honey?
So I think it's Hatton Gardens, but it's just like...
Do they sell Milk and Honey and gold teeth there?
No, unfortunately... well, I mean, listen...
I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a whole grill.
You know what?
Wait.
If you did get grills, I know for a fact that in Miami, you would be further up the social hierarchy. Because apparently, if you get grills when you look like you really shouldn't have them, it's not a real win.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What? Yeah, sick. Yeah. I'm going to fly to Miami and really fit my mouth out with grills.
Yeah. Not for real. But no, Milk and Honey are dope. And the Milk and Honey is, of course, a metaphor for...
Funny.
For the jewelry itself.
Oh, I thought it was Milk and Honey funny. Isn't that like Cockney slang? Obviously not.
I love it, Jamie. You're just a walking culture clash. I think I'm in love with a singer, yeah, but I want to get richer.
Life threw me a bag of lemons. No wonder I'm bitter. What, you think people should be more honest and open? Is that what you think?
Oh my God, listen, the whole entire campaign is about speaking openly and honestly. I think that should always be the way. But I do think there needs to be some something around... the option, choice. Everyone should always have choice, you know. People, I don't feel as though there should ever be a pressure to completely open up. I think it happens when it needs to happen and it happens right.
Dude, but I totally agree with you on that.
People who are in places of influence, though,
yeah,
I do think transparency is great in those contexts, as long as it's genuine, because genuine and fallible, you know, that people can change and adapt. It's just because that's our responsibility as people of influence.
But what you're saying is very true, is that what you're doing is, I agree that people need to have, they shouldn't be forced to open up. They should have their moment and time to open up, and whatever that moment is. But also what you're creating is a space in order for people to do that. And I think a lot of the time is that people don't open up is because they don't have a space in order to open up and be honest and truthful about themselves. And it's almost about your friends creating that space, you creating that space, or individuals creating that space, or even influencers creating that space so they can see it and actually start talking about it.
Yeah, well, and I think it's refreshing to see influencers be like that, because there's such a fear of appearing like less than. I think that's always been a fear.
But then, can I play devil's advocate with you? Because, you know, is there a problem where, God, and I got to step carefully on this situation, because I don't know what I even think. Is there a fear that, you know, with all these different things like trends, right, you talk about becoming vegan or be pescatarian, all these different things, that talking about mental health becomes a bit of a trend, and that some people just go, they may feel depressed and anxious and all different things, but they talk about it with such vigor and such kind of thing, when they actually probably don't understand what they are feeling sometimes. Do you think that's true or no?
Yeah, I think there'll always be, like, again, about, that's what I talk about commodifying something, because... you know, we're in Mental Health Awareness Week, and there's a lot of genuine work that goes on in the week. But similarly, there'll be an expectation, say, from certain brands or certain
that's
spaces.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
It becomes a market.
Right, so. In the same way as a good friend of mine, Emma Gannon, was talking about her frustration towards being asked as a woman to speak on International Women's Day for free, you know, when it's like, that's almost someone ticking the quota of, look, we're wanting to open up a space for women, you know, whereas it's like, if you actually wanted to do the bits for International Women's Day, you'd make sure that you found some fucking space in your budget to pay the women around you. Do you know what I mean? That's
yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
So the commodification of mental health is probably happening, and is whatever. But in regards to people as the public picking up on an increased awareness and maybe not handling it with expertise, say, I don't think it matters in this context, because I think the increase in anxiety and depression and the increase in the desire to understand, or the desire to do things like yoga or you know, become vegan or whatever, well-being. The reason there's been a spike in well-being is because I genuinely believe that we're living in a totally wild time, and we underestimate how much of an implication it has on your mind and body. You know, sometimes we talk, when I have these conversations with people, it's like, we forget, if we just take a step out, of course people are going to be freaking out every day, because you've got this other limb with everything on it. Like, the entire universe is in your palm, and you're looking, and it can have the ability to trigger loads of parts of your being that
totally.
Do you know what I'm saying? Well, whereas yeah. all you got to have to do is be connected. That's all.
Well, there's an interesting thing. There's two things here because firstly, you talk about that why loads of people are feeling this different way at the moment. You know that kids, you know, in the 60s, if you had anxiety. Or depression or whatever, you would actually be sent to, if it was quite extreme, you'd be sent to a psychiatric ward. Mm. And kids at the age of 8 at schools have the same level of anxiety that people did in the 60s where they'd be sent to a psychiatric ward. It's crazy. Yeah. And also in terms of the, you know, tablet that you have in your hand, your Instagram and stuff like that, we're meant to know, you know, if you have a wedding or you have a big party, you probably invite 150, 200 people max. That's what you have, right? You weren't to have this village mentality. And out of that village mentality, you have your USP, your unique selling point. So the fact that you are the best at music, or you are the funniest, or you're the one who's best in the gym, or are the best at painting, whatever it is, you have your unique thing. Problem with Instagram now is that you go onto Instagram and every single person is funnier than you. Every single person is better in the gym than you. So you then feel that you can't succeed in any way that you want to succeed. So you actually just wake up every single day, well, that person's better than me. So in fact now, because we're connected to everyone, which I think in some ways is a good thing that we're connected, but because we're so connected, we actually don't feel like we can succeed in the areas that we should.
I think that's why I think the mental health conversation is so important, because I think actually if you do approach that world consciously, it can lead to a greater sense of harmony. If you make consciously healthy decisions in the internet space, that can be great. So for example, if I've woken up every day and I've seen this and it's like pain and it's like shifting my mind, then we have it within our power to go, I'm not going to follow that for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just going to keep my circle of my friends and I'm going to see what they're doing. Or I'm going to go on whole Instagram and see what steps I can take to improve my day. Or I'm going to eat better, because actually if I'm eating better, I'm not so stressed out by what I see. Sometimes if I eat and sleep better, I don't even have my phone by my bed because I can get up at the right time. Some people just need to buy an alarm clock.
Yeah, Some people
just need to literally buy an alarm clock so that they're not woken up by their phone and then instantly met at their most vulnerable. When you wake up, you're at your most, you've just come out of like the most transcendent experience you can have soberly in dreaming, whether you remember it or not. And then you're going, bang.
I wake up every morning and look straight at my phone. Yeah. I don't know why I do that, but I do it, man, because I'm literally, it's that fear of that I've missed something or forgotten something, or I'm not connected to someone, or that I need to see what everyone else is doing. And
if you took like an hour.
Oh, mate, but the problem that I have a lot of different problems, but one of my problems is that I find it very hard to commit to things. So I try to give up Diet Coke, okay, and I gave up Diet Coke for like 3 months and then I started drinking it again. Why? No reason. I just gave up. Same with like things like I started meditating for a bit and then it was great and I liked it, then gave it up. So I said to myself, right, I'm going to read before I go to bed, not look at my phone. Did that for a bit, then gave it up. And then in the mornings, not going to look at my phone, but then I did that for a bit, gave it up. And for me, I'm very good in some ways, but I'm very, very bad at disciplining myself in other ways. And my discipline becomes super hard. And I think as humans, we are very bad at disciplining ourselves because we want everything. We want to do everything. We want to do it the entire time. So it's discipline is the most important thing. And we spoke up before about boundaries and all those different things, and you've got to set yourself boundaries. And if we don't set ourselves boundaries, then it becomes a huge issue, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'm so like trying to hold myself back from giving you some like pseudo therapy from that.
Dude,
shit.
Give me that therapy, man. No, tell me.
I don't know. I'm not qualified.
You okay? Is anyone qualified? Well, yeah, people definitely are
people
qualified.
They've studied for a while.
But listen, you've studied life. Go on, tell me. It's good to have this stuff.
Well, no, I think it, what interests me by you saying that is why it matters that you stopped.
Why does it matter that for me,
you're saying you have intense periods of interest and then they dissipate.
It's not intense periods of maybe it does. Yeah, maybe I do have intense periods of interest, but no, I don't, because I'm persistent with things. My issue is I want to stop smoking at the moment, right? I can't do it. Dude, it's terrible. But, you know, when I don't smoke, but then when I'm around in a social situation, I'll smoke. Why? No reason. I just do it.
Why don't you want to smoke?
Health benefits, mainly health benefits, really.
Yeah, because you want to treat your body.
You want to treat your body well, right? You're 30 years old now. I don't want to be smoking, you know, and just putting all that tar into my system. And I kind of want to do it for health benefits. And also because I kept saying to myself I would stop, but I find it tricky to stop sometimes.
Because you're addicted to nicotine.
I don't think it's the addiction. I don't, weirdly, I
feel like it might be.
Yeah, but I can go 2 weeks without doing it and I feel fine. And also, it doesn't actually even make me feel good. So what is it? What is it? It's I still can't put my finger in it. I think I do have an addictive personality, but I can also stop things quite easily. And I'm quite balanced in certain areas. But with the cigarettes, but cigarettes are such a minor thing. It's just with cigarettes, I don't know why I continue to smoke them. There is no reason. It doesn't benefit me in any way. It doesn't make me feel better. It doesn't help me in any situation, but I just do it because it's such like a thing that I turn to in social situations. Yeah, I'll go and have a cigarette. Why not? And so I'm so used to it that I need to rewire my brain in order to not do that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm figuring. It's slightly tricky at the moment.
It's repetition, really, isn't it?
Complete repetition, right?
I have my own struggles with that, you know, because I've given up pretty much all of my vices.
And yeah.
I don't mind the idea of... Sometimes I feel like when I smoke cigarettes, I find it easier to write, which is...
Do you feel more relaxed and things like that?
I'm not sure about relaxed. If anything, I think it gets you a bit more like...
Yeah, it gets you hyped up because that nicotine, you get that nicotine thing, right?
I don't know, but I do know that there are ways in which to go about...
But can I ask you a question? When it comes to, you know, sort of substances and stuff like that, and, you know, and whatever it is, like cigarettes, alcohol, and stuff like that, you giving up, do you miss it or do you not miss it?
I thought I'd miss alcohol more now. I think I really struggled for the first like 6-7 months, but it's more, I don't necessarily miss the alcohol, I miss the loss of self and the social freedoms, you know, because ultimately drinking would make social situations easier at times.
Sure.
And there was an anxiety that was I just have to live with, you know, that would be very present without, you know, something to calm it. And it's a great excuse. Alcohol's an amazing excuse. You know, oh, I didn't mean to say that. I was drunk, or oh, I didn't. You know, there's no. So now I just like have been living a life with like I pretty much have no excuses for my behaviour.
Yeah. That's totally true, right? And that. But also, do you?
But I don't miss it so much now. I actually, I quite like waking up in the morning and feeling
fresh. Do you find social situations sometimes tricky because you don't drink?
Yeah, all the time. I don't go out as much as I did at all.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's sad.
That would be my hard thing that I definitely...
Well, summer's going to be particularly hard, I think. I haven't had a summer... I have had a sober summer. Yeah.
It's hard, though, because I definitely use alcohol as a crutch for social situations, for sure. And I have for a while. And
I think you find other ways of enjoying yourself. It's tough, though. But on you, mm-hmm. importantly, I have to begin by asking how you are genuinely.
Yeah, dude, I feel good at the moment. I feel actually weirdly really good at the moment. I mean, I've had ups and downs throughout my 20s for sure, through lots of different things.
How old are you now?
30.
Really?
Yeah, 30.
You feel good?
I feel good. I mean, I went through it, but I'm single now. I broke up with my girlfriend about a month and a half ago.
Whoa, that's really recent.
Yeah, really recent. But I...
How long were you with her?
A year. But I came out of a 2.5 relationship just before that. So I was in a 2.5 year relationship, which was really quite toxic. Had a 3-4 month break, and I just feared being lonely. And so then I went straight back into another relationship straight after that. And that lasted a year. And, mate, she was epic. She is epic. And we had a freaking cool relationship in lots of different ways. But I was internally just not present or happy with myself. Mm. And that reflects on so many different things. And so I couldn't be in a relationship until I figured out myself. And so now I sort of came out of that and actually had to figure out that I can be alone and all those different things. And that's okay. And figuring myself out and all those different things. And so it's kind of quite an exciting sort of journey to go down that I don't have to. Also, I mean, dude, I would be in relationships where like I would find a girlfriend who would need me, which is a really bad thing to be. They would need me for something, whether it was security or whatever it was, you know, or emotionally. And that is not a healthy relationship at all. And all my...
I don't think it's too bad to be needed.
Say again, sorry.
I don't think it's too... I think it's you can healthily need someone in a context.
Yeah, but it wasn't healthily. All right, it really wasn't. It was
so like a lot.
It was codependent, yeah.
Okay.
And that was definitely my fault because I would go... Freaking afterburners on, here we go. God, I love you. Here, oh my God, I need you. And then suddenly, And they play it cool at the beginning. Okay, I don't know. And then suddenly I go, wait a second. What are you doing? They go, well, you love me. What is happening here? And I would be very confusing. And it was totally my fault. And I feel a lot of guilt for a lot of things I did. But that was a long-winded way of saying, I feel all right at the moment. I feel okay at the
would
moment.
Would you say it's like, is this your best period of mental well-being?
Yeah. I would say for the past 9 years, I'd say it's good at the moment. But then I don't want to jinx it.
You felt good for the past 9 years?
No. I didn't feel great for the past nine years.
Oh, sorry. So out of that.
Yeah. And I can go into that if you
well,
want.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was going to ask what's been your worst period of mental well-being, and kind of was that also the first point at which you were made aware of what mental health was anyway, or were you not aware at all?
Well, dude, so I'm 30 now. So when I had a lot of things. So I grew up in a very privileged like house. You know, I was sent to boarding school, went on nice holidays, blah, blah, blah. When I was 8 years old, my parents divorced, and we lived in a huge house in the countryside. You know, swimming pool, tennis court, all these different things. It was super fun and it was amazing. Had my brothers and sisters all there. And my dad divorced my mum, his second marriage. And that happened, which was pretty traumatic for me without realizing it was pretty sad. Because I always had this fear of them divorcing for some reason. Don't know why. I was so scared of it. And then I was sent to boarding school at the age of 8 years old, Summerfields, and I wasn't told the concept of boarding school. So I arrived there, and then my mum didn't pick me up at the end of the day, and I was like, hang on a second, I'm sleeping here? And I wasn't allowed to call my parents for 2 weeks.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's actually fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, that's traumatic as hell.
I had a nanny for 8 years who used to look after me called Julie. She left, and then we moved to London. So we moved from the countryside, a big open house, you know, to London. I remember getting to this house in London, just off Kensington High Street, and there was a building, there were, you know, these houses there, and I said, oh god, it's quite small. And my mum said, well, you're gonna be upset, it's only one of those. I didn't realize it was a townhouse. I thought the whole thing was our house, because I come from a big country house.
Oh my god.
So it was pretty traumatic at that time.
The dreams now of anyone owning a townhouse on High Street, like,
man, yeah, fucking hell. Exactly, man. You're super, super privileged, right? So anyway, then all the, you know, and I could go into all these different things, and it's not like a thing, but anyway, what happened was is I got to 22 years old and I joined this TV show called Made in Chelsea, which is a reality show and things like that. And it was, you know, and if people listening haven't seen it, it's basically a TV show about posh kids. That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And I did it for lots of reasons. Did it for loads of reasons. But the problem is that I came from a place which was, there wasn't that much security in terms of like emotional things and stuff like that. And then I went into a TV show which had no security at all. And so at the age of 23, after my first series, I suddenly started having panic attacks.
Mm.
And I remember it so vividly. I was watching The Voice on TV and he started talking about bronchitis. And I was like, okay. And I was like, oh, I feel a bit weird suddenly. It was like a trigger in me. And, you know, I was partying pretty hard. I was having, you know, I was drinking a hell of a lot.
Mm.
And I had this panic attack. And I took myself to hospital because it felt like I was falling. I thought I was dying.
Mm.
And the hospital said, you're having a panic attack. And I said, no, I'm not having a panic attack. What is a panic attack? I'm having a heart attack. And no one could explain to me what was happening. And so for the next 6 months, I'm the really outgoing. I can chat to him. I couldn't leave the house. I had to go and do this TV show, pretend everything was okay. I remember standing in the shower one day. And I said, God, and I went, what's wrong with me, out loud? And I said it out loud. I started crying because it came in reality. Yeah. And it was horrendous. And I didn't tell anyone. And I masked it with alcohol and I masked it with everything. And this kind of whole process went on until I was about 27. And it was in and out. It was in and out, right? So there'd be periods of me feeling super anxious and super upset and super things. And it was all mainly anxiety. And then I would come out of it and I had periods of being okay. And then it would go back into all these different things. And when I was 27 years old, I think I was 26. Yeah, 26, 27. I was sitting in a restaurant with my buddy and everything was, it was all a bit hectic and all these kind of things and just whatever. And suddenly it was like a fog went over my eyes. And I was like, what is this? And the fog didn't disappear. And the only way I can describe it is like I was dreaming. It's like I was in a dream state. So I wasn't seeing a therapist, never saw a therapist, just trying to deal with it by myself. And I finally went to a therapist, didn't tell anyone again, just kept it all completely quiet.
Yeah.
went to a therapist and said to the therapist, I just don't know what's going on. I just see a fog every single time I wake up. Or just I'm walking around. So he sent me to a psychotherapist, and the psychotherapist said you have something called depersonalization.
Oh God, yeah. Oh man, derealization.
Derealization, depersonalization.
That's saying, really intense anxiety.
It's so basically what he said to me is I said, what's that? And he said, well, you get it if you've had PTSD, bad depression, bad anxiety, bad different things, and it's basically your body's gone on autopilot to protect you, and it puts a shield over you, so you basically feel like you're in a dream state. I had that for 6 months. And the problem was, he said all those things. And then at the end, he said, you can get it from all those different things. And you can also get it from psychosis. So I, being me and being a sort of catastrophizer where I just worry, I said, well, I've got psychosis. That's it. So I convinced myself I was going mad. I was like, well, I'm going mad. That's it. 100% I've gone mad. And I had that for 6 months. Didn't want to wake up in the morning because I'd open my eyes and it'd be this fog. It was terrible. And I had to live with this whole situation without telling anyone again.
This fog, like...
The only way I can describe it, have you ever had those times where you're so hungover that you're like, oh my God, I don't even know where I fucking am?
So you mean more like a figurative, like...
It was
you're just zombified.
I'm zombified. The fact, you know, so we're chatting now, right? Mm. And we're just having, you're having a free chat and we're just doing whatever. If I was talking to you back then, I would have to think about my next word.
Yeah.
So I'd have to think about, I'm going to say the, I'm going to say you. And being on a reality show where I was seen as the guy who was super charismatic, fun, entertaining, all those kind of things, I had to try and live up to this person the entire time because suddenly this person had gone for the moment.
Yeah.
And it was horrendous. But then I went to therapy for like two, and I think for anyone, right, it doesn't matter if you're anxious, depressed or whatever, I think therapy just in general is amazing. It's power, right? Having that self-awareness. And I went to therapy and I did it for 3-4 years. I just stopped it, actually. I don't know why I stopped, I just did. But went 3-4 years and just basically figured out myself. And I think what happened was is that we spoke at this before, that we live in this life where instant relief. If you want to get drunk, you take a drink. If you want to get high, you take a pill. If you want to be entertained, you watch YouTube, right? So I was like, well, where's my quick fix? Where is it? And my therapist was like, there's no quick fix. Yeah. You have to go and solve you first. And I realized that mine was all down to this abandonment and
of course
all these different things. But dude, it was intense, man.
Boarding school sounds, I can't, that's next level.
Oh, dude, yeah, just, I mean, I think the educational system as well, man. I think... And sorry, I rambled, John. I apologize.
That's good, mate. No, it's good stuff.
I'm sorry, man. I do ramble a lot. But I think the educational system is flawed because...
Yeah, of course. Sorry, can I just apologize for my snoring dog? Can you hear that? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's badass, man. We love that.
Yeah, sorry. Spike's just snoring.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Spike, you want to just quiet down a bit? All right, sorry, carry on.
But
I
think the educational system is flawed because I think people don't focus on creativity as much. And I think that if you're failing at math, science, and history, you're seen as a failure. And I was lucky enough because I was good at sport. But then when I was 18 and I wanted to be a rugby player and I damaged my knee and I didn't have sport anymore, I was then seen as a failure because I wasn't good at work. And I listened to this
guy. Very competitive, isn't
it? So competitive, man. I listened to this guy the other day, a guy called Ken Robinson or something like that, who spoke about creativity, and he told me this amazing story, or told this to the crowd. He said his wife was a ballerina, and she was an incredible ballerina, but at school she was failing everything. And the headmaster brought in her parents to kind of talk to her about how she was failing. And they sat her in the room and they said, look, your daughter's not doing very well. They went, okay. And she said, she's failing everything. They went, okay. And he said, can you come with me? So they took the parents outside the room. And as they did, he pressed play on a music machine, shut the door and said, watch this. And they looked in through the window and their daughter started dancing. He said, your daughter's not sick. She's not a failure. She's a dancer. Send her to dancing school. And he says, he sent her to dancing school. She was a ballerina her entire life. She wrote plays with Lloyd Webber. Now she's a millionaire. And one teacher would have said she's sick and a failure. Another teacher said, no, she's going to go to dancing school.
Yeah, I love
and
that.
And it's amazing. And it's the fact that, you know, creativity is so important. And for me, I just feel that, like, I wasn't... Yeah, there's so many kids out there, man, that are so hugely talented in so many freaking ways. And they're not giving... I went to a boarding school, so I was mothered and I was spoon-fed, and thank God that can happen. If I was in, you know, the state school system or things like that, I would have just died. There's no way I would have had anything, and I was super fortunate in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I found school... Yeah, I didn't like it.
You didn't like it, but you're super smart, right? And you're super creative, so...
I think, like, I think intelligence is, like, I don't even know how you would... I don't think it's necessarily measured... just that purely academically, do you know what I mean? I think...
But it is growing up,
there's
though, right?
There's like a social intelligence, there's an emotional intelligence, there's an academic intelligence, there's a sporting intelligence, you know what I mean? Like, you know, if you think about the amount of mathematical calculations that have to go through like a baseball or cricket player's mind before they strike a ball or throw a ball, that's genius in my mind, a footballer.
Sure.
The fact that they, you know, set up a free kick and they're like aiming the trajectory of a ball over a wall, you know what I mean? It's not, I think we underestimate how much skill is involved in that. I think for me, I think I'm quite apt. I learn things quite quickly, and I pick up on things quite quickly. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, mate. All I know is that I worked really hard in school, outside of school. I didn't really...
But in what, in terms of studying?
I did what I wanted. Whatever I was passionate about, I'd do after school, and I'd do it a lot. And, you know, and it was... to the point where I used to just enter competitions after competition. I just would, I anything that didn't have a kind of expectational pressure on it, I would do, and I'd probably do it really well.
But dude, that drive that you had and that passion, that desire, where does that come from? Where did that kind of like desire to go, right, I'm going to go and do this, put myself out there and be vulnerable in front of these people?
I just think that I just think in terms of my drive, I think just my mum's a rebel, you know, she I grew up on marches and,
really,
fighting the government and fighting the system. So I just think, you know, I remember my mom said to me, and I was so much younger, she said something like, you know, Jordan, if someone tells you to do something, it doesn't mean you have to do it. You always have a choice. So, you know, like fast forward and she'd be like, do the dishes. And I'd just be like, no.
But weirdly, good advice.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, there's always ups and downs to these things. But in terms of drive and ambition, I think from an early age, I was definitely, my mum definitely would have, I asked a lot of questions as a kid. I was one of those kids who would just, sometimes wildly inappropriate questions. I'd just go up and ask someone exactly what I wanted to ask them. And I think my mum did a good job of, she's quite liberal in her parenting, so she encouraged that rather than, you know, there's a different type of parenting, which is more regimented, maybe, which is like, don't speak to strangers or don't ask questions when you're not, you know, that kind of thing. Where my mum was like, you know, do your thing.
But dude, it's interesting you talk about that authority, because they did a test, and I can't remember what they actually made a movie about it. They did a test where they put people in pairs, and they said, right, this is your partner, this is who it is. We're going to take you to a different room. Your partner's going to sit in one room. There's going to be a wall between you. You're in the other room. Uh-huh. And they said that the partner in the other room is connected to electrical wire that you have control over. Every single time you get a question wrong, you have to turn the electricity up. And they went, okay, fine. And this person in a jacket, he said to them, said, right, okay, here we go. Here's your first question. They get it wrong. They're right, turn up the electricity. So turn it up. And you'd hear screams coming from the next door room. And the person in the room say, are they okay? Are they all right? Go, yeah, they're fine. Just, you know, keep going. And they keep getting questions wrong because they're impossible. They kept turning up to the point where the electricity would be killing. And then the screams stopped. There's no more screams. And there's a point that you would go to the lengths, and they came in, it was completely fake. The person tied up was never tied up, all those things. But there's a point that if someone in authority, you would go to the depths of murdering someone if someone told you it was okay to do it. And you are set apart from all those things because actually you've never followed in their footsteps. 99% of people in this world actually are sheep and they follow the shepherd. They all do, right? And they go to these things and they follow. But you're that 1% who actually doesn't. You actually question it.
Well, I think everyone has the capacity to. It's actually
sure, everyone does.
School is one of the. It's pretty much that time you walk into a machine and they go, right, we're going to try and kick that rebel out of you.
Dude, it's crazy. And also school, this is the point, you know, Mozart said it so well, is that everyone's born creative, but life drives creativity out of you. And that's what happens, man.
Totally.
And fucking, this is why the system is so annoying, is that we get all this stuff driven out of us throughout life, and so many people could be so badass.
I think it will change, though.
Do you think so?
I think it has to, because it's outdated. Like, without getting too catastrophic, we are existing in a time where technology is advancing rapidly, quickly, sure. Right? So, I heard this, I can't remember what I heard it on the other day, but it's such an incredible point. I think it's on an interview on YouTube or something, but someone was saying, like, oh, it's a comedian, Michael Shea, that's it, he's a great guy. And he made a joke saying, like, I can't imagine what it'd be like to do maths in school now with an iPhone in your pocket. The most annoying thing in the world, to know that all these fucking questions, you can just pick up a phone and just answer instantly. Not even type it in, just go, hey Siri, what's this? Like, and it's done.
Yeah,
someone's
so
telling
true.
You got to do it. So I think we're moving into an age where the soul of the human spirit, the actual purpose of existence is no longer going to be in the accumulation of knowledge, because we're creating things that will be infinitely more capable than we are, which I think is pushing us towards true humanity, in my belief, which is connection to another person, creativity, things that are fluid and aren't rigid. Like, fluidity is basically what makes a living thing living, because it's not an algorithm.
Dude, I totally agree with you. With the thing of AI coming in, right? So AI is going to come in, and they, of course there's all this different stuff, but creativity is going to be fundamentally the main thing that people are going to be able to do and stuff like that. And it's so true. You know, there's this really scary thing they think, that if AI comes in, right, and takes over, humans are just going to be paid a salary by the government just to be a human. And you'll go back to like caveman styles where you'll just reproduce.
Yeah,
and you'll,
probably.
You'll just be a human and that's it.
Yeah, sounds fun, doesn't it?
Sounds epic, man.
Do you feel comfortable talking about your mental health publicly? You're quite open.
Yeah, I do now. I do now because beforehand, no one... Well, they probably did, but no one... told me what it was like. I had anxiety and panic attacks, I said, and all these different things, and no one else was experiencing this. And I remember saying to people, I remember saying to my friends, like, do you ever feel like a bit panicky and a bit scared but not really? And I went, and they would go, no, I feel good. And I'd be like, oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah. And so
really scary.
It's really scary, man. And when no one else relates to it, it's pretty horrible. And then I started getting tinnitus, and that was really bad. And so no one else was experiencing tinnitus and all this different stuff. And so I kind of just had to deal with it myself. But now there's two things here. I didn't talk about it because, firstly, it was my own experience and I dealt with it my own way. And I think that a lot of people are very quick to just talk about it and go, oh my God, this is how I felt. You know, this is my experience and stuff like that. And I don't know if always that makes it so... you know, I went to some pretty dark times, and you know, just saying that doesn't really make a difference. So I didn't feel the need to say it as much. However,
I think that it's important to.
I do.
Would you do that now?
100%. But also, weirdly enough, I'm quite a private person. Even though I do a reality show, I'm still pretty private with lots of things. I'm very open, which is a good thing, thank God. Because if I was an eternal person, I would be in a real deep bit of trouble. But also, I think I had to get to a stage where I really understood myself. I had understood what I was feeling and made a change of it, because otherwise I'd be preaching without really knowing the answer to the equation that I was experiencing. So I really had to figure everything out. And I think now, having turned 30, I really understand myself and other people, and I'm pretty self-aware. And so now I can talk about it because I can explain this to different situations. And the problem is that so many people talk about what they're feeling, but then they don't give a solution to it.
Feelings especially aren't, but they're not, I don't think they're necessarily solution-based. I mean, there's solutions,
sure.
there's suggestions of how to improve things in the future.
But I think that's a bit of a solution, right?
What would you say to someone who, because I think derealization, something I haven't experienced myself,
but
people close to me, it sounds utterly terrifying.
It was horrible.
So what would you say to someone who is struggling with derealization?
So derealization and depersonalization, this is a similar thing. Firstly, the biggest thing that happens when you experience something like that is you think you're going mad.
Mm.
So you think you're insane. And the problem is, when you think you're going insane, it's a pretty scary thing, because you think your life is over. And then what you do is you catastrophize your life. So you say, I'm going insane. This is going to happen forever. It's never going to pass. Mm. I'm going to end up doing something stupid. But and you go down this whole horrible road of experience. Thing with depersonalization, derealization, first and foremost, 100% it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, it gets better. The second thing is that so many people on this planet are experiencing the same thing as you. And worse, you're not the worst. There's no way you're the worst. There are other people worse than you. And the other stuff is that it's like a cloudy day, right? You're having a very cloudy day. There's clouds in the sky, but there's blue sky above that. It's just about finding a way of getting through those clouds to that blue sky. Yeah. And there is that pathway to do it. You need to start talking to people, start being honest, start opening up about yourself, start getting some sort of therapy, whether that's with your own family.
There's a lot of information as well as books.
All those different stuff. It's start talking to people, start books, opening
podcasts. Maybe.
And do you know what the biggest thing for me that changed my life was exercise?
Yeah.
And God, I say that my sister struggles a lot of time with different times. She's an actress and she struggles with like confidence issues and stuff like that. And I say to her, get up in the morning
and run. Yeah.
You know, there's Tyson Fury, who I listened to his podcast with Joe Rogan. And he went through a really dark time.
Yeah.
A really horrible time. And he just said he woke up one day and started running. And it was like, oh God, I feel better. And it's a slow process. But I promise you now, exercise, not where you go to the gym, you lift a couple of weights and you read the newspaper and you go in steam. Go and sweat.
Yeah.
Go for it. Doesn't matter if you're running, playing tennis, squash, whatever it is. Go and sweat. 45 minutes, 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Promise you'll start to feel better because your body starts to get rid of the toxins. Don't drink, stop caffeine, those kind of stuff, and just let your body reset. You're told this thing where we're all pint glasses, right? We're all pint glasses, and we've got holes in the pint glass. Some people have big holes, some people have small holes. But toxins, life throws toxins at you, so you put toxins into drugs, alcohol, love, relationships, blah, 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 all these different things, and your pint glass starts to go up. People with small holes, your pint glass overflows pretty quickly. With big holes, it takes longer. But at some point, if you don't deal with these situations, your pint glass will overflow. And it's just your pint glass right now has overflowed. You just need to settle it back down.
What are the holes in that analogy?
Well, I just think, I don't know.
Are holes confidence?
I think the holes are... The holes are these things that, you know, so...
Is a hole outlets?
It's outlets. So for me, right, I have small holes in my pint glass because...
I love this analogy.
Yeah, this analogy as well.
You have small holes in your pint glass.
Yeah, because I'm innately quite insecure.
Is that a hole?
That means that my holes are smaller. So if you're not that insecure, you have big holes so you can allow those toxins out. Do you see what I mean?
Right, okay, hold on.
Do you see what I mean with this?
Is this actually by the laws of physics, is this actually a sound analogy? Because I feel like...
Not by the laws of physics, but like if you see it as an analogy just in life, right? You know, everyone's different in their own sort of ways. You know, you get some people who are scared of the dark and some people who actually like the dark.
But right? What I can't establish is how you would lose water any faster with a bigger sized hole than if it was a little sized hole. If anything, wouldn't it be more beneficial to have smaller holes?
No, because you have the same amount of holes. You just have one, some are bigger and some are... So on
but
one
if you had glass, one massive hole, you'd just constantly be losing...
Yeah, well, then you'd be all right. So your pint glass never overflows. So you'd be fine.
So you want a massive hole in your pint glass?
Yeah, you want... So basically with you, right?
Right.
So whereas before, you now, you spoke about clarity.
Does that include the top of the pint glass?
Yeah, the top, if it goes over the pint glass, then you're freaking out. But with you, right, you were talking about this like self-awareness you have now, right? And you understand.
I'm trying.
You're trying, right? But you now are good at letting things go.
I'm better than I was, yeah.
Yeah. So with me, what I had to figure out is that I was found lots of things. I couldn't let go of stuff. I was worried that my friends wouldn't like me a lot of the time.
Yeah,
it sucks. I was worried about being abandoned all the time. I was worried about all these different things. And so all of these issues meant that I was just bubbling over.
It's just fear, mate.
It's just fear, exactly. And life is scary, man.
Yeah. I think we've got to find a way of just like of visiting that fear, actualizing it.
Yeah. What is your mentally your biggest fear?
I'd say my biggest fear is not loving, not centering love in my experience. Let's say because.
But why are you worried about? Because okay, you know we've sort of seen each other over the years, right? And you've been always super friendly, always super nice. And I would totally not get from you that you're not a loving person. at all.
Yeah, but I think that is another interesting thing. I feel like love is there are forms of love that we identify with morally, and there are also really difficult parts of love which we don't really talk about so much. So, for example, acceptance of rejection is a form of love.
I get you. I get
so, like, so if I would, so or so, you know, if you had a boundary and the oh God, the conflict was I'm going to disappoint someone and there's going to be a possibility that they'll abandon me in whatever context, versus me being true to what I need in a moment and having trust in my own experience and then allowance for that experience to be out of my control. That's a dream scenario, because then you can go into the world and you just surrender to those realities. If so, you love someone profoundly and in that moment they decide they want to abandon you, you will... The love that you can place in your own experience or in my own experience would be able to protect me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can go around being friendly, but listen, there's a load of people who are friendly are fucking dickheads. Like,
no, I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
And you know what? At that time, especially when I was in my 20, 23, I was, you know, I was in relationships where I was acting up and I wasn't being loving in a true
soulful way,
sacrificial, yeah, kind of like compassionate way. I'm always going to be friendly because that's just how I believe life should be, but you know, you mean...
Did you truly mean that? Is that what you're trying to get to?
No, I think that, like, there are some people who aren't as bubbly as me, but who knows if they're as loving as me, because you only really know how loving someone is after an extended period of time, I'd say.
Then can I ask you another question? What is the biggest lesson or biggest thing that you had to teach yourself?
I've just got to stop being so hard on myself, really. Still really? Doing it now. Yeah. What about you? What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, I've got two, I think. But one of, because of this depersonalization, my biggest fear is insanity. It really freaks me out. Yeah, dude, really, because I was really quite scary for a bit. And also, I think that my sort of USP is the fact that I can be, you know, engaging and quite charismatic and things like that, and losing my mind would be really quite horrible. But also, one of my biggest fears is being in a relationship with the wrong person.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I just think that marrying the wrong person or being in a relationship with the wrong person, and, you know, I come from a divorced family, and I really think that... I went to this wedding the other day, dude. One of my best friends in the world went to Brazil, and he gave this speech. It was on a beach, and his wife was there, and it was incredible. And he said when he met his girlfriend, he went over to her house to watch one of her movies she makes short movies, and they sat there, and her dad, and there's a part in the movie where it paused and it said, what is the meaning of life? And she turned to her dad and said, Papa, what is the meaning of life? And he said, daughter, the meaning of life is to love. And my friend, his name's Cozzy, said, and when he said, at this moment I've realized that is for me the meaning of life, just to love. And that is whatever form that is, it's love. And I'm really worried. And for me, I really want to be loved massively. That's why I want people to love me. But also, I really want to love someone. And so to be in a relationship with someone where there isn't the love there and it messes up or something goes wrong terrifies me.
I mean, you just have to focus on how much love you're wanting to give out.
Sure, man.
If you're scared of not getting it back, that's going to be tough, isn't it?
Oh, but dude, I had this.
I had
that problem, though. I don't know why. It freaks me out that I don't.
We could
go for hours.
I think, let us know, listeners, if you want a part two of Jamie Lang, because we have been cut short based off of just surreal circumstances. I don't know why I said surreal then. That makes it sound like there was some kind
there's some other world that runs.
Yeah, literally aliens were doing a voiceover here before and we had to let them do their thing because, you know, Tesla were about to launch something. But quick fire questions to leave it.
Okay.
Before we do get into the depths of why you're terrified of love. What's your favourite colour?
Turquoise.
I love that. That's my favourite colour. Yeah, did you say that because I said that earlier?
No, I didn't have one to tell you. Turquoise, 100% my favourite.
Why?
Because it's like Navajo Indians used to love turquoise. I love Navajo Indians. I love the way it looks. I think that it looks good.
Navajo is in Native Americans.
Yeah.
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah.
Turquoise is a wonderful color.
And also turquoise. What is it? It's the mother of what is it? The color. It's the mother of something. And I had a really strong mum, like you did. Uh-huh. And I really respect. Like,
it's also, you know, what I realize why I love turquoise is because it's the color of the sky meeting the grass.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Ground or like
a
sky,
or like a lagoon. Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah. Or a lagoon.
Or a lagoon. Or
yeah. I don't know what. Holiday to Cyprus.
Yeah, there you go.
What's your favourite shape?
Kind of like a triangle.
Nice, why?
I don't know, because you have 2 points, but they connect at the other point. So
that's what Alt J said.
Who said that?
Alt J.
Really?
The band Alt J?
I don't know.
You know Alt J?
No, I don't know.
You don't know who Alt J are? Triangles are my favourite shape. 3 points where two lines meet.
Still don't know it.
Tessellate?
No.
Well, we haven't actually got onto any questions about music, which was a plan because that's a big part of the. But I will tell you now, my gift to you, Jamie Lang, is to go and listen to Tessellate by Alt J.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, okay.
I mean, their name is a triangle.
Really?
If you press Alt J on a keyboard, it becomes a triangle.
Does it?
Yeah, dude. Have I just blown your mind out here?
You freaking blow my mind.
Okay,
man.
Quickly. What one artist has saved you emotionally and mentally in your life? One doesn't have to be your favorite.
Bob Marley. I mean,
why do I feel that that's like awfully cliche?
Is it? I don't know. Maybe because I just want to love Bob Marley.
I love that. Okay, wicked. And if you have an hour to yourself, what will you do?
A
whole hour just to be in touch with yourself.
And I can't speak to anyone else?
No, I've decided.
Okay.
You can if you want.
I'd probably call my friends.
Really?
Yeah.
Your friends, plural?
Yeah, I'd call friends, yeah.
A conference call?
No, I just...
One after the other?
Because I work so much.
Okay, you're not allowed to be on your phone.
Okay, I would...
No, I actually do like that, innit? He's allowed to call his friend. Maybe write a letter?
I write more letters at the moment. But people go that, yeah,
you
I would
write
just,
letters at the moment.
Yeah, I do. I write thank you letters. I didn't do it for a while, but now I write thank you
That's
letters.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, all the time. I saw this. I think, yeah, letters. If when someone receives a letter, it's like a banging thing.
It is. It's almost unheard of.
It's almost unheard of. So, yeah.
Jamie Lang, you're a legend. Love you loads.
Oh, appreciate it, mate. Thank you very much.
Nah, mate, we'll have you on again for sure. And you can take me on private parts if you want.
Oh, dude, I would love that.
Well, let's fucking do it.
Let's do this, man. Hey, John, appreciate it, man.
Love.
Thanks very much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.